Meanwhile, at the DC Nation,
we are tonight's entertainment.
You're overwhelmed. Freeze is overwhelmed.
The shark, red puppet, black spray.
None of the Robins ever complained.
Titans, go!
You're going to melt just like a grilled sandwich.
And show you just how powerful I really am.
Always hold on to small things.
So I know we should escape my sight. Let those who worship evil might be where my power, Green Lantern, lies.
But let the universe howl in despair, for I have returned.
We have no more use for this one. Kill
him. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the DC Nation podcast, dedicated to reviewing all the amazing content DC Comics provides to you, because it's fans. We're solely focusing on the TV shows Gotham, The Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, and DC's Legends of Tomorrow. I'm Dan Schmidt, your host, and with me is a guy who is fully capable of saving a school bus full of cheerleaders. My co-host.
Hey, everybody, it's Nico, and welcome to Across the Airwaves DC Nation. On this week's episode, we continue our coverage of the DC Nation with the second episode of Season 2 of Gotham.
Yes, for sure. And before we get into Gotham, we actually have some other Batman news as we dive into our DC headlines section with the possibility that a live-action Batman Beyond movie could be in the works again.
Robbie Amell wants to star in a live-action Batman Beyond movie. Robbie Amell, who plays Ronnie Raymond in The Flash, would love to star as Terry McGinnis in a live-action movie adaptation of Batman Beyond. Quote, I'm a huge fan of that idea, Amell said during a panel at Salt Lake Comic Con. I think the problem is because they have Batman going on right now, they won't make the Batman Beyond movie until I'm too old to be Terry McGinnis. By then, I'll probably be the old, crusty Batman. But I'm a huge fan of that idea. I think that it would be a great property. With regard to what sort of direction the movie should take, Amell suggested a dark and gritty production that doesn't require a massive budget. Quote, I think the smartest idea for them would be to make it like a $30 million movie. Don't do a $200 million blockbuster, do a dark, gritty version of Batman Beyond. With how awesome the VFX on Flash have become, I agree, we don't need $200 million to do a great character-driven film. I think this sounds amazing. Is Zack Snyder bringing Watchmen to TV? HBO in talks about a Watchmen TV series. Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons' 1986 series Watchmen is pretty much considered not only the greatest superhero comic book story of all time, but also one of the greatest novels of all time, period. It suffered a decades-long development process where most of the potential adaptations bore little resemblance to the source material, until finally, director Zack Snyder, using his clout after the success of his hit film 300, convinced studio Warner Brothers to let him do a faithful adaptation of the original graphic novel. And say what you want about Snyder's 2009 movie, it is far more faithful than it almost had any right to be, considering just how complex and layered the graphic novel is. Was it perfect? Far from it, but it was far better than most expected. And yet, even as faithful as it was, there was still a ton of material from the original graphic novel that was left out, simply because of time. Even the extended 3.5-hour cut of the film on DVD leaves some crucial plot elements on the cutting room floor. This has led many fans to say that Watchmen, if it even needs to be adapted at all, should be something akin to the lavish long-form HBO series such as a Game of Thrones. I figure if they can do Game of Thrones, why not Watchmen? According to a rumor that just surfaced, that now seems to at least be a real possibility. According to sources, original Watchmen director Zack Snyder isn't done with Alan Moore's world yet and has had meetings with HBO about bringing Watchmen to life again at the cable network as a long-form series. The details on how he approached the series are unknown, but there are lots of possibilities here. It could be a one-off 12-part miniseries with one episode per chapter, probably, in my opinion, the best choice, or broken up into smaller bundles of episodes over the course of a few years. Or they could drag it out even further and include material from DC Comics' recent Before Watchmen series as well. Details are vague, as this was, until this afternoon, merely a rumor, but HBO has now confirmed that early talks have taken place, but no details were released and likely won't be until a deal is in place. But I'm excited, because I loved Watchmen. It's my favorite comic book of all time. Absolutely worth watching the film, even if I did have some issues with it. So I would be 100% behind watching this TV show. And that's the news with Nico, DC headlines for this week.
All right. So with that, we're going to dive into an episode of Gotham that was entertaining, but I think jumped the gun with one of Batman's, and one of my most beloved villains, come the Joker, with the episode of Gotham, give the Rise of the Villains story arc entitled Knock Knock.
Upon returning to duty, Jim leads the task force to bring in the Arkham escapees. Meanwhile, Alfred destroys Thomas's computer to protect Bruce and is then forced to turn to Lucius Fox for help.
All right, everyone. I know people have been praising it. Get Cameron Monaghan played the role great. I'm incorporating every incarnation of the Joker in his performance. But as someone who loves, has analyzed the crap out of the battles between the Batman and the Joker, I feel like they jumped the gun a little bit with his character. In my opinion, Batman is who creates the Joker. He creates that psychotic break within Jack Napier or Jerome or whoever, you know, the comics or this TV show or other incarnations of Batman say he is. He has this psychotic break to become the insane Joker by either seeing Batman or getting dropped a vat of chemicals, depending on which origin story you want to go with. So I was kind of annoyed that we were seeing the Joker do kind of the big time things to really cause terror in Gotham, almost like he did in The Dark Knight, you know, with trying to blow up the school bus full of cheerleaders and killing the police commissioner, which is a character that he's not supposed to kill till years later and things like that. But I just thought they went too far, much like we kind of complained about last season with Selina and Bruce. So, Nico, do you think the writers of the show got so excited about the opportunity to write for the character of the Joker that they completely forgot about developing Jerome, get to the Joker, using the slow burn storytelling method that has made villains like the Penguin and Riddler so successful on the show?
Absolutely yes and no. I can say that because I think there is still the chance that Jerome is only a Joker candidate and that this entire Jerome story arc may be a giant red herring and he may just turn out to be an insane character and not the future Joker. I say that as well because it seems like the maniacs are being controlled by the Theo character and right. The Joker is not one to be controlled by others. So that gives us a little credence that maybe he's not the Joker. Although on the other hand, this Jerome character does seem so much like the Joker, and as you said, is looking like it is headed that way completely, what with his already pale complexion and everything that, and just the way he acts, it is so much like the Joker. Right. If that's true, then I think this appears that Gotham has split from its, or at least my understanding of its initial mission, of telling the story of Gotham before the Batman. It appears this is going to be much like the idea that Alfred is Bruce's first training master, an Earth 2 version of the origins of the villains, and that means they can tell their own story and develop classic characters in a new way. For instance, it appears that Barbara Keane, being part of the Maniacs, maybe implies that she might be Harley Quinn in this Batman universe, all but solidifying Jerome as the Joker. I'm like you, Dan. I prefer the idea that the Joker sort of came out of nowhere and just showed up when Batman did, but I am not opposed to seeing a different reimagined origin of the Joker either here on Gotham, but it does mean that this is no longer the origin story of Gotham before Batman in the original continuity of Batman, if they go that way. So this is not going to be Earth 1 or Earth 0 or, you know, that story of Batman's origins. It's going to be a reimagination of it if they go this way with Jerome.
Okay, I don't like it. I really don't like it.
Okay, well, I'm fine with it as long as they establish that that's the way they're going to go.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think the Joker is an iconic character. He's been around for 75 years. It's been done this way for 75 years. I'm not really into changing it. I feel like, you know, the main hero, their big-time arch nemesis, should be created at once. They should be what created each other. And here it's just like, he's automatically a psychopath. And I don't believe the Joker, or Jerome, or whatever you want to call him, started out that way. I really feel like what we should have got is more of a character similar to Jack Nicholson's Jack Napier before he gets thrown into the bed of chemicals and becomes a Joker. Really, he was just someone that, again, I'm going to tweak it a little bit, adding some of what Keith Ledger said his version of the Joker's origin was, where this idea is that really he should just be a low-level enforcer who at this point just gets his kick out of screwing over mob bosses and turning people against each other.
Right.
That's really what we should see. We should see someone that's ambitious, that wants to take over the city, that wants to be the big crime boss at this point, until seeing Batman kind of changes the game a little bit. And he just decides he wants to see the world burn. That's my, what I want to see, and that's what I think the show should do, because they slow burn built the Penguin and Riddler, so I don't see why you can't do that with the Joker. Could have slight flashes of his insanity or the laugh, or can reference his making a joke that he did this episode. Here I thought they went full on, and I just don't like it, and I think you're going to run out of material if you just jump right into him being a psychopath from the get-go, okay, going all out. And again, I think this guy he's working for, this Theo guy, he's going to screw him over.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Joker screws everybody over. So that's how this arc's going to end. He's going to get screwed. He's going to make Jerome so powerful that he's going to get screwed. And there's a story. But again, I don't think this should happen this early, this quick, because I think they're going to get themselves into trouble.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, I think, but what you said about them being so excited to write for the Joker in live action, it just got the better of these writers, I think.
I agree. Again, I thought that they were a little bit smarter than that. But again, we did have the Bruce Salina thing last year.
Right.
I thought they jumped the gun, but they fixed it. So, right. I don't know.
Well, that's why I'm saying, and I'm sort of developing this idea that this is a completely different continuity origin story of Gotham. And so that's what we kind of have to go with to explain some of these deviations and some of this stuff. You know, to the best of my knowledge, Dr. Thompson hasn't even met Bruce Wayne in this version, and
right.
She's so important to him in the future that seems a little crazy. Now, that's probably still coming.
I think so.
But in the original continuity, she had met Bruce long before she ever met Gordon. So
she met him before his parents were killed.
Yeah, exactly.
And then she examined him after the parents were killed.
Exactly.
Like right after.
Yeah, like Gordon took him to the hospital afterwards because he was in such a state of shock to get checked out.
Right.
And that's where I think that's where Gordon and Thompson first meet.
Right. And there's different versions. Some people say,
right.
Batman Animated Series said she was on the scene when it happened.
Okay.
So there's different variations, but yes, that's where they make all the connections.
Was she at the play as well?
No.
Okay.
She,
not with them, but like as a separate, she had gone on her own and then the commotion happened and she showed up and saw that it was Bruce or something like that.
Could be an interpretation that was.
Okay. All right.
You may be right. There's some reversions.
Right. Because that makes a lot of sense in the sense that she and Thomas worked together and they were family friends. And well, in some versions, they were family friends,
right.
And that's why she was Bruce's doctor, or that's why she was, you know,
right.
had met Bruce and had examined him before. And that's why she took it upon herself to make sure he was okay that night. So,
well,
yeah.
So, the animated series, their explanation, now that I think about it, she lived where they were killed.
Okay.
She lived in that neighborhood. So all the ambulances, and there was all this commotion in the neighborhood. And then she ran out there to see what was going on. And that's when she found Bruce there.
Okay.
And realized what happened. Yeah. Because at that point in time, that neighborhood was actually a nice neighborhood. But then when they were killed there, it went downhill.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, going into some of Batman's origins and where he came from, I think the development of his character on this show, into his destined alter ego, is perfect. It's going just right. I really like what they're doing with Bruce's storyline. And I thought smashing the computer was the perfect way to convey Alfred's struggle with letting the boy he loves, like a son, risk his life as a vigilante. And even though it seemed cruel, I kind of got where he was coming from. Because at this point, if it hasn't been proven that becoming a vigilante or superhero works, there isn't one in this world yet. So it's like this. It kind of seems as outrageous as it would in the real world for us today. And I really like how this led into Alfred meeting Lucius Fox, because after seeing Batman Begins, I always kind of wondered how these guys were able to trust each other. Kind of excited Gotham could give us a chance to see that story unfold. Nico, are you interested in seeing how Alfred and Lucius Fox became trusted friends dedicated to helping a young boy become a hero?
Yeah, I am. I loved that meeting in the bar between these two.
It's fantastic.
There are two types of people on this planet, you see. Them you can trust, and them you can't. I love that. This has long been a relationship that has just existed in the comics, and was not really discussed or explained in any way in the films. It will be interesting to see Gotham dive into exactly how Lucius and Alfred became friends, and then how Lucius became Batman's tech guy.
Heck yeah.
That's going to be awesome, because essentially he was Thomas Wayne's tech guy, and in this version, they're kind of making Thomas Wayne like he was preparing almost to be something like the Batman, with the way that that Batcave was put together.
Right.
Thomas had his blood on, you know, frozen and on stored so that he could help himself. There was a, you know, bulletproof vest with test slugs shot into it and all kinds of different stuff. It was like Thomas was gearing up to become something similar to the Batman, or something, a precursor to the Batman. So.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. This is interesting, and it'll be fun to see Lucius grow with the show.
I like the idea that Thomas Wayne kind of accepts it. You know, they've never really said that.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been Alfred saying, well, I don't know if your parents would want this life for you. And here's the situation where it's like, he doesn't want the life for Bruce, but he understands.
Yeah. Well, in my mind, it very much ties back to the Flashpoint story.
Yes.
Where Bruce was killed and Thomas became the Batman. And they even have in that animated movie a scene at the very end where Thomas writes Bruce a letter.
Right.
And we can assume in the letter that it tells him that he's proud of him and the choices that he's made, because Barry's told him all about the man that Bruce has become. And yes, it's very much like, I wish you happiness, but if you're called to do this, then I am proud. I am proud of that. I am proud that you would give up and sacrifice all your own personal happiness and love and love life and the ability to have kids and everything like that, you give that up basically, or that's not your focus, so that you can follow your calling. And I very much understand that. I was struggling with a similar decision right before I was killed. So that was a great ability. And we sort of got that same letter to him in this story last week. So that's so great. So good. And it just, again, shows how much fans these writers are. Yes, they're kind of jumping the gun with the whole Joker thing. But again, I think we discussed that is probably because they're such huge fans. They just really, really want to get there.
Yes. But again, I always had kind of thought if they were going to do an origin story, we threw around the idea of that Bruce Wayne show that they were going to try a couple years ago. And I kind of wanted to see interaction slightly between a young Bruce and a young Joker. Get some of that stuff. So at this point, we don't get to see that. But I think we've got other good stuff to be excited about. And I really like this interpretation of Lucius Fox, because he almost essentially acted as Thomas Wayne's Nightwing or Dick Grayson. It was like he almost acted as his conscience, like Dick Grayson kind of did.
Yeah.
Just from how he's explained how he loved Thomas Wayne. And it was almost like he was a father or a mentor to him. So I thought that was really fun to see. Okay, this is a character that's kind of in that same situation as the apprentices that Bruce has down the road. And again, people are like, you probably should use the word sidekick. Could kind of refrain from using that nowadays, because the Robins and a lot of those characters in the comics now have become pretty strong heroes in their own right, in my opinion. So that's how I feel about that. And speaking of sidekicks or support team, there wasn't a whole lot of development for Gordon in this episode, because it was kind of more about getting him from point A to point B, going from detective to commissioner. In this crisis where Commissioner Essen was killed, so it forced him basically to step up as leader of the GCPD against the Maniacs, which of course will come with its challenges. But the big character development in this storyline came from Bullock, because the death of the commissioner made him turn away from his life of happiness to protect his brother and partner. We had both thought last week that Bullock was going to come back to stop the Joker from going down a dark path, but I think this works well, even though the Joker wasn't supposed to kill Sarah Essen until years and years later. Mika, did you like the circumstances that brought Bullock back to the GCPD? Could you think this episode lacked emotional character development for Gordon because he had to go from point A to point B of going from detective to commissioner?
You know, I think this death of Commissioner Essen will be a better motivation or saving moment for Gordon than necessarily Bullock coming back to save his friend would have been. I think that would have been fine, but I think this is going to be even better. I think Bullock will help guide Gordon still, like we had suggested, and be his reminder of the man he should be. But I think this death of Commissioner Essen, one of the few other cops that Gordon truly respected, will force Gordon to be the man he was and the man he will become to live up to Essen's brand new day call to action or rallying cry. I think this works better as a motivator than just having Harvey come back. So I think it plays better for Bullock coming back. I think this all plays better with Essen's death.
Yeah.
The death of a friend or someone he respects makes a lot of sense to bring Harvey out of retirement. You know, I think they've handled this part of the story very well, and I think it's just going to get better and better as they go. They may be making some slip-ups in other aspects of this show, but handling Gordon and Bullock has been rock solid throughout the entire run of this show.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree with that. They're fun to watch. Get any scene with Bullock with Donald Logue, because Bullock is really entertaining.
Yeah.
I love it whenever he's on screen. It's like, yes, get him back in the mold. Get him back into things. And again, this is a very good way to establish the brotherhood that exists within the GCPD in the future. You know, they're corrupt. The GCPD has its issues. But when it comes down to when one of their own is killed, they come together and do something about it. And Gordon establishes that in the future. And I think this is his rallying cry and way to do that. So it's very, very exciting. And again, this is something different for the Cox, too. You know, Commissioner Loeb goes to Commissioner and Gordon just took over. So there was no, like, you know, lost officer that motivated the entire force to get together. And I think this was a much better way of handling and throwing that in there too. Where they kept Loeb, because they had Loeb be shady and could do his, you know, deal that he did in the other origin stories. But to have another commissioner come in after that was a good person who gets killed is a good thing as well.
Right.
It actually fits very well into the first Joker origin story, because in that story he kills the police commissioner and Gordon takes over, much like what happened in The Dark Knight.
Right.
So that might be what they're throwing back to with this as well. And Sarah Essen is a character that the Joker does kill in the comic books. So that's where I'm like saying, okay, Jerome is the Joker now. There's no red herring thing. Even though if they still did and pulled it off, I would be impressed and be pretty happy.
Yeah, me too. That's why I keep throwing it out there as a possibility, because I think that that would be a really fun thing to see. But I agree with you. I think that this is the way that they've gone, the way that they've decided, and he is going to be the Joker. I agree.
Good to get. But I think the red herring thing would have been more fun. I wish they would have rolled that out, because I think that would be more fun to play with than even doing full-on Joker, at least for a while.
Right, exactly.
They keep the audience guessing too. I mean, the marketing for that could be crazy. You know, who is the Joker? You know, I can just see the posters of like the different candidates. You got to pick, or it's like an internet vote or something crazy like that.
Yeah, they definitely could have had a lot of fun with that. And the slow burn would have made it so much better if someone we didn't even think about as being the Joker, right, or, you know, was like, oh, it can't be that guy. It can't be that guy. And then it turns out to be that guy, you know?
It would have been amazing. Mm-hmm. But again, Stephen Moffat isn't writing the show to like surprise us and have some character come out of nowhere as the Joker.
Right,
like,
exactly.
Wow, we never thought of that. Yeah, that's the left for Doctor Who and Sherlock. But, guy, you know, this is the thing. I'm happy where the show's going. I'm so excited about watching it. I disagree with the Joker thing, but it's not enough for me to say, God, screw it, I'm mad, I'm not going to watch this show. You know, it may play out to my liking. We were kind of shaky about the Bruce and Selena thing, and they fixed it. So maybe that's what they're doing here. So I'm going to kind of reserve my judgment a little bit until we just see how things play out.
I think that's a good plan.
Yeah,
good plan.
So, but I'm going to vent because I'm very critical on that storyline. So just get ready for that, folks. And I think that sums up everything we're going to say about Gotham this week.
Yep.
I can't wait to see part two of this story and see how things play out. And if, you know, Jerome really is the Joker, or he's someone that gets killed by Gordon at the end of the episode. We'll see. So with that, Nico, you want to go to the closing? Tell people what we're doing next week. We're kind of getting back to mainly our main schedule.
Yeah, on our next week's episode, we continue our coverage of the second season of Gotham with episode 3 and the premieres of Flash and Arrow. So make sure to join us again for all of that. But for now, we're going to roll that pre-recorded closing.
Get at our DC Nation podcast website, located at dcnation.acrosstheairways.com. Go on our Across the Airways website, located at acrosstheairways.com. You can check out our other podcast shows, including Across the Airways, which provides entertainment news, along with weekly reviews, got our favorite shows not related to superheroes, such as Sleepy Hollow, Castle, Star Wars Rebels, Supernatural, Person of Interest, Doctor Who, New Girl, Modern Family, The Big Bang Theory, and more to come in the future, because the TV lineup is always changing. By the way, if you're a DC Comics fan who also has an interest in the Marvel Comics side of things, I would recommend checking out the show hosted by Danny Babacht, Nikki Amy, and myself, known as Helicarrier, the S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, located at helicarrierpodcast.com, get in the iTunes store. In addition to these programs, check out Thrones Cast, our podcast hosted by Nico, Nikki, and myself, dedicated to reviewing episodes of HBO's Game of Thrones, which is available at the website thronescast.acrosstheairways.com or on iTunes. You can send us your thoughts on each Game of Thrones episode by emailing us at thronescast@gmail.com, tweeting us at thronescast, again that's at thronescast, leaving us a voicemail at 773-809-3363, again that's 773-809-3363, or by posting on our Facebook page located at facebook.com/thronescast. Also, you can listen to Across the Airways, the DC Nation podcast, Thronescast, a Game of Thrones podcast, get Helicarrier, the S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, got the Mix Internet Radio Station, owned by Jack Stifel, Stitcher Radio, or if you use Apple devices, download the Podcast Box app. And if you're on a Windows or Android device, you can download our apps from the Amazon Marketplace. And the Windows Marketplace has a regular Windows Phone app. Because for how you can contact us to give your own insight on the TV shows we review, provide suggestions on how we can improve your podcast listening experience, or just to say you like what we're doing, email us at acrosstheairwaves@gmail.com. Comment on our Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter at acrosstheairwaves. Again, there's no the on there. It's just a Across Airwaves. Join our circle on Google Plus. Or leave us a voicemail at 773-809-3363. Again, that's 773-809-3363. I would also recommend that you check out our YouTube page, which features trailers for upcoming movies and television events, such as Avengers Age of Ultron, Batman vs. Superman, and Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. Along with this content, the ATA YouTube channel is a great source for panels from past Comic-Cons and will be a great source to find videos coming out of Comic-Con 2015 this summer. All right, so once again, for our other ATA podcast hosts, Nikki Amy, Wu Kim, Steve Nostro, and Michael J. Petty, I'm Dan Schmidt.
And I'm Nico Ristic.
Gonna tell our next episode. We'll catch you on the airwaves. See you, everybody. Have a great week, and remember, the joke's on you.
Lifts, man.
We now return to our regularly scheduled program.